Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com. Today is the 24th of June, 2014, somewhere in the world, and 23rd of June, 2014, somewhere else, where we're joined by the one and only Jack Blood of DeadlineLive.info and RadioFreeBlood.com for his regular monthly appearance, although it's not so regular and it's not always monthly, but at least it's an appearance. Jack Blood, thank you as always for your time.
That introduction reminds me of something else that I could take a mite all for, but thank you very much, the one and only James Corbett, the truth machine. As always, great to be with you.
The truth machine. I like that. All right. Well, let's live up to that title and start getting into some of the truth. And I just want to go through some of the things you're covering on DeadlineLive.info, because always just so much info coming out. But one thing that I'm really interested in is the story that I don't have any direct access to. I don't feel that I have any cultural ties that would allow me to really have any insight into this issue, but I know it's a huge issue. It is, of course, the immigration issue that seems to be heating up right now with all of this talk of amnesty and people flooding across the borders. And I did note a new story up on DeadlineLive.info, immigration paradigm, new detention centers to be built by DHS. Tell us about this and what's going on.
Well, first of all, this whole immigration thing, it's very difficult to find out what's really happening because everyone is riding it as a propaganda vehicle, both the parties, or I should say the one party that pretends it's two parties. It is a human rights violation, human rights nightmare at the border. And we've got people on both sides of the border, all sides, because there are many, you know, different countries involved in this influx of immigration, which is going to bring, they say, 90,000 children, many of them by themselves, up over the border because they've been promised amnesty either on this side or on the other side by the drug cartels that are exploiting them. We actually have a exclusive story at DeadlineLive.info in our featured section. You might have to go back a page, but it's really only about a week or two old, James, and it's how the Mexican cartels, who we know are in bed with the elites and the multiple alphabet agencies in this country. That's largely what Fast and Furious was all about. There's plenty of evidence to prove this, but they're really taking advantage of these children, just like refugees are taking advantage anywhere in the world, whether it's by DynCorp, by the United Nations, by Halliburton. The list kind of goes on. So we have our own refugees in this country, and there's nowhere to put them, apparently. Now, if you remember a couple of years back, we all covered the story that Halliburton got a no-bid contract to build ICE camps, that is, immigration detention centers, all over America. You remember that? What happened to those?
I have no idea. You're going to have to tell me. What did happen to those?
Okay. Well, I mean, maybe it was a rhetorical question. Because that's the question I have. What happened to all the immigration ICE camps, the detention centers that they built back a few years ago, that being Halliburton, with no bid DHS contracts? Well, now it appears that they've got to find new homes, places, way stations and stopping points for this influx of immigrants coming into the country. So new money is not only going to build new detention centers, and we can get to that in a second, but it's also going into the pockets of the leaders throughout Central and South America to stop crime and to fight the drug lords in their own various countries so that life might be more suitable for the immigrants so they don't have to come here. I mean, it's just such a joke and such a massive payoff that I think Greg Palast talks about in Best Democracy Money Combined does a pretty good job painting that picture of who benefits. So whenever we have immigration, we have people exploiting it. Same thing in Iraq, right? Qui bono? Who's benefiting from this illegal immigration? Call it if you want. I call it illegal immigration because I know there's a lot of people on the list. They want to come here. I don't know if we can have 6 or 7 billion people living in the United States. I'm sure some would want to stay behind in nuclear Japan, but a lot of them will want to come here. So how do you choose who gets to come here? That's just a whole nother political issue. I'm just wondering, when the detention centers are empty, when amnesty comes, when the Dream Act is fulfilled, when there is a place for these people to work and be, you know, productive members of tax-paying voting society, what are they going to do with those detention centers? These are the same people that are hoarding bullets and wargaming for civil war and civil unrest in this country. So I'm a little alarmed by that.
Rightfully so, I'd say. Well, I'll take nuclear Japan over nuclear US any day of the week, but that's just me. But you're right to bring up that different aspect, the sort of the third angle to this, because I know that it boils down to just that acrimonious debate that goes on, and I understand that debate and the way that it's framed and sort of the sides that go on in the mainline conversation. It's kind of either you're on the side of the one-party system and amnesty for all these people, or you're just one of those racist hillbillies who hates immigrants or something like that. That's the way that the debate is framed in the mainstream conversation. But you're right. I mean, there is not only the sort of drug cartels on the one side of the border that's actively carting and helping these people in and trying to offload them into the United States, but then there's also the prison industrial complex and all of the other sort of multi-million dollar facets of this police state nightmare that's been built up as part of the infrastructure for handling this problem that, again, has been created mostly by the politicians themselves. So I think that we have to look beyond that sort of that one-dimensional debate that goes on in the headlines, and it's difficult to find our way into that. What sources, I mean, you say it is, and I agree with you, it's difficult to know exactly what's going on because, again, so many people are trying to spin this off for political points. So what sources of information can we turn to for reliable information about what's happening on the border?
Well, people can listen to my show and it's pretty tough. It's one of those things that is just such a divisive issue that it's going to be a political hot potato at any time, especially we're in an election year here. It's the midterm elections. They don't really talk about it much, but that is one of the cases. And we just saw, one of the main guys for the Republican Party, Eric Cantor, go down because he was supportive of the Dream Act or amnesty or, you know, some type of help that would be in the form of amnesty or financial help for illegal immigrants. And so this has not gone over well in the Republican Party. You know, they're just doing it because they think that they might have a shot at some Hispanic voters. They're wrong. They're wrong unless their name is Jeb Bush, who married a Hispanic woman, has a Hispanic son, heir to the throne. You know, maybe you don't have that kind of a case to make. And Ted Cruz, being Canadian, and or his father fought with Castro or Rubio, who's just really a stick in the mud. These people really don't have a chance. So I think that it's talk about the Dream Act. I think the Republicans are dreaming that it's going to benefit them somehow. And I think they've already seen that they're going to pay for it in the elections. I just want to go back and say the children that are being exploited on both sides of the border right now, I mean, they are being preyed on for kidnapping. This is the new cartel device to replace growing of marijuana, because the legalizing of marijuana, or the at least decriminalizing of it, the availability of it, is driving prices down. It's making it harder or not really worth their while to grow across the border. So they have, at least according to most information I've seen, they have moved into both heroin and that is growing of opium. They're in direct competition with our troops in Afghanistan, dare I say, and kidnapping. And kidnapping is big business. So they'll pay to, you know, bring the kid up to the border, and then they'll go back to those parents, especially if they know if they have anything, and they'll extort them for whatever money they can get out of them. If they can't get money out of them, James, these kids immediately go into global sex trafficking. So, I mean, this is the human rights condition that we have here in this country. And I think that if you talk to anybody about it in that way, and I believe if we actually, instead of hurting them, help them in their own countries, help countries become more independent and powered by people and not politicians and the elites, then eventually we see this problem either go away or become something that's in the history books. Certainly opening up all the borders, or they're calling this the North American Union or the Free Trade Area of the Americas or the European Union or regional government, isn't the answer. And I'm afraid that this will also springboard into that. So what did we see? We had to have IDs because what? There's illegal immigrants in the country. So they had the Real ID Act. It failed. One of the reasons, speaking of marijuana, it is illegal is because the evil crop picker might, you know, do some marijuana and rape your daughter. I mean, so they've used this problem in the past again and again and again to try to push some kind of draconian policy onto the rest of us. And I think, you know, it is good news that we're not falling for it as much as possible. But there are a lot of people right now looking at this condition at the border saying, just do anything. The other extreme side of it is Rick Hairdo. I was a cheerleader to Toll Roden Bilderbergen, Bush League, Bush Perry. That's the governor's name in Texas. And he wants to send predator drones, James, not surveillance drones, predator drones to the border and troops. So that's the other full extreme here. We got the side where we just give them anything they want because they're privileged members of society. And the other side is we just shoot them. I'm somewhere in the middle.
Well, excuse my ignorance, but is Rick Hairdo Perry still governor of Texas?
Yeah.
I can't believe that. That is so unfortunate.
And they're actually gearing him up to run for president or stalking horse Q, because they'll be, you know, A through Q in the election and not make sure to divert any, you know, negative attention away from Jeb Bush. So that's
right.
The plan.
Yeah. Well, that's crazy. Well, no, I hear you, because again, it's always the question of what false solutions people can be railroaded into. And I don't think militarizing the border is one that's going to work out for the average American, because again, all of the militarization is always just used as an excuse to turn that machinery back on the citizens themselves and to turn it more into that police state. And we've seen that happen over and over again. So I just don't think putting machine guns and predator drones up on the border is going to be the answer to this. But it leaves the question of what is a solution to this, because again, I think most people actually do care about the children who are again being used doubly as victims on both sides of this this debate. But what do we actually do about this? I mean, it seems like an intractable problem, and there's certainly nothing on the political horizon, at least nothing being proposed in the mainstream that would even approach being a solution to these problems.
Yeah. Well, dare I say, read This Is What We Do Again, and maybe the solution is in there. But that's covert for, you know, we need to get rid of the people that are in charge, because if we keep doing the same things over and over again, we're going to get the same results. Reagan gave pretty much blanket amnesty to people that were in the country and that had been here for a while and were law-abiding citizens, blah, blah, blah. And it would be the last time. And that was a Republican. I want to remind the Republicans now and the Democrats. So here we are back here again. What is it? 30 some years later, and nothing has changed. Like I said, I think the solution is to get the IMF and the World Bank and the other MFs out of it, to stop aiding and abetting the drug cartels, to stop propping up corrupt governments such as the government of Mexico. Do you know that if you're from Mexico, they can just deport you? If you're from anywhere else, you can actually apply for political asylum. But in Mexico, not so much. They can just deport you right away. I think they almost consider it part of the country. Again, we go back to the North American Union and NAFTA. No, I think, you know, first of all, you have to take away the incentive to come here in some ways. And look, I don't blame people living in shanty towns with no plumbing and no food and living off of, you know, $200 a year in Mexico or wherever to come here. I do the same thing. So we have to be able to reverse the policies that enable corruption and violence in those countries and stop stealing from them and every other country. And lo and behold, it'll industrialize and get better and we'll be wanting to go there. But we won't be able to, because you'll need ID and stuff at the border.
All right. Well, let's leave that mess behind for the moment, but obviously something we'll have to return to in the future. But let's talk about some other things that are happening there in the States, including something that I've been following. I did a newsletter editorial just last weekend about the pipeline situation in a lot of different places, but also in North America. And of course, the main point of contention between Canada and America right now, the Keystone Pipeline. Will they, won't they? You know, what's going to happen politically with all of this? And I know you have a story up. It's an interesting story. Connecting the Iraq conflict to the Keystone Pipeline bid, and basically making the argument that the spiking oil prices because of the Iraq conflict may be making Keystone a more politically viable idea. Let's talk a little bit about the Keystone Pipeline for people who don't know what this is.
Well, I'd love to get your take on it, too. And you're very astute and ahead of the curve, as usual, James. And as soon as you hear there's an oil problem, you start thinking about the Keystone Pipeline. It's oops.
The all-seeing eye, the Pyramid Pipeline. Yeah.
What a lot of people don't know is, and there's so much to this, we'd just eat up the rest of the time, me talking about it, because I've been on it for a while. I'm not supporting the Capstone or Keystone Pipeline, either one, because of the horrific environmental mess that it will cause, because of the eminent domain that will be invoked, and because the money will be robbed from one group and given to another group, the wrong kind of redistribution of wealth, if there is a right kind. There's a lot of things involved in it. But yeah, you're going to see grandstanding politicians in an election year, especially Republicans, saying, drill, baby, drill. See what happens when we depend on foreign oil. We have to have this pipeline now that, by the way, I think goes right to a Koch Brothers refinery in Houston. I mean, that's the final destination of this thing. What a lot of people don't know is that Iraq is not a large supplier of oil to the U.S. We're not dependent on them. We are dependent in some ways on Canada, as you know, Saudi Arabia, Mexico, Venezuela, Russia, just to name some of our main dependents. And this is why when we have conflicts with some of these countries, I just laugh because I know that could be solved with the price of oil. You're an oil-producing country, you want the price of oil to be high. If you're not, this is economic warfare. You want the price to be low. So this is how we kind of negotiate in this petrodollar world we live in. But it wouldn't even matter. And right now, as you probably are aware of, you know, most of the oil is in the South that isn't controlled by whatever they're saying it is. And I have massive disagreements with this whole ISIS story to begin with. Or in the north in Kurdistan, where the Turks and the usual suspects have still control of that oil. So even though they did take Mosul and Kirkuk and allegedly robbed a bank for like $600 million,
that one. It's so ridiculous.
I know, isn't it? But the thing is that most Americans can just be told that Saddam Hussein was behind 9/11 or that Saddam Hussein is in league with Al Qaeda. I mean, they'll just believe anything, and they'll believe that without Iraq's oil running at full bore, you're going to pay $5-6 a gallon. And we can't have that happen. So thus, one of the many cost benefit analysis solutions is the Keystone XL pipeline.
Well, again, there's so much to talk about there, but on the Iraq issue especially, that was one of the things I wrote about in my newsletter, a story that's flown under the radar to a large extent. The Kurds in northern Iraq have built their own pipeline independent of the federal pipeline network there in Iraq, and the Baghdad central government is extremely angry about it and actually got Italy to issue a warning to a bunch of oil refineries and traders to say, don't take any oil from this new Kurdish pipeline because it's, you know, you'll lose your access to the Iraqi oil. And now they've shipped out a bunch of oil through that pipeline to through Turkey to a port there. Right. And they loaded it up on a tanker, and they sent the tanker out to the United States, but it had to turn back. It got stuck in Morocco. They wouldn't let it unload there. They finally found a buyer. Guess who?
China?
Not quite. Israel. Because Israel doesn't have any stake in the Iraqi oil fields right now. No. So they say, hey, bring it on over here. So, and of course, that plays into Israel's foreign policy goal in Iraq and the Middle East in general, which is to keep everyone at each other's throats and keep them divided. Yep. So, you know, amp up the sectarian throat cutting there in Iraq. Why not? So mission accomplished.
Yeah, well, they already have Iraq's water for the most part, so give them the oil too. Why not?
Yeah,
let's
exactly.
Make it easy on them. And yeah, it's interesting. And the thing, I mean, I had people that in the Iraq War, James, snuck in through Turkey and through Syria to get and hang out, literally. This is back when we had embedded reporters and bombs were falling. Reporters were dying left and right. And some of these guys would come in and go live with the Peshmerga or live with the people in the north, and really gave me quite a lot of intelligence. And so, you know, that war was... it's still ongoing, and the Kurds are tough, man. The Kurdish militia, they are tough, and the Turks would have easily come in and taken that oil, and they wanted to, and they held out, and I think that just for the sake of not getting in too much international trouble, there is some cooperation going on there. Look, this is the problem, and this is what, again, to invoke the name of Greg Palast a second time on your show, I apologize. The guy just, I think, had his, like, fifth heart attack or something. So let's give him a little bit of props in his work, because it's not always popular, because the general liberal in this country, if there is such a thing, says, you know, we went into Iraq for the oil. No, in large part, we went in to keep the oil in the ground. So again, how much oil are we actually getting? I got it down to the barrel here from Iraq, not very much. And so if the Kurds are pumping more oil than they're supposed to, if they're pumping renegade oil, and that's kind of what got Saddam Hussein taken out. Today was the big story. I love this. This is going to really get Americans upset. The guy that tried and Saddam Hussein to be hung, I'm not even sure if that actually even happened. I just have pictures in the internet to go by. The ISIS got him. So that's kind of weird that a fundamentalist Muslim group would name themselves after an Egyptian goddess. I just think that's kind of interesting too.
Funny how that works out. And I'm sure you've heard Freeman talking about Shock and Awe and how that relates
definitely.
And all that.
Yeah, that actually came up on my show the other day too. Yeah. You know who I had on was Dalia Wasfi, whose parents are there, whose family are in Iraq, and she's an American and a doctor. Her mother's Jewish and her dad is Iraqi, right? But she was trying to tell me, and I think there is some truth to this, that there was an actual uprising happening there. And I just think that rather than get mowed over or have to put, you know, a lot of guns on that thing and drop bombs on the poor people trying to take their country back, they infiltrated them with a little bit of this so-called bought and paid for NATO group called ISIS to make them look like bad guys. And she said they're making up a lot of the violence and the beheadings, and that a lot of the stuff we're hearing isn't even happening, and that there isn't even that many ISIS people on the ground.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's the missing point in all of this, because there's, what, 800 to 1,000 fighters or something like that versus however many thousands and thousands of fighters in the security forces. I mean, it's completely overwhelming in terms of just numbers of people. So I think there's something vastly wrong with that story. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if a lot of it's just being played up for the media. And there are a lot of, you know, convenient photo ops with the guns pointed at people's heads and, you know, here's the atrocity, it's going on, we better do something. Where have we heard this story before?
Yeah, it looks like the end game is to do what Joe Biden, remember when he was a genius before he turned into Dan Quayle over here, the vice president, president of Vice, as I call him. Remember when he had said, well, I think the best thing to do would be to break Iraq up into three different countries. And it kind of looks like it's going that direction. So we'll see what happens.
Well,
but I don't think Americans are really paying too much attention to it. As much news as it's gotten here, I don't think you're going to run and find a lot of people that want to go kill them in Iraq. I think most people are going, nah, I've had about enough of that, you know?
Yeah, no, I hear you. I don't see a lot of push among the general public for this. It's just it is getting a lot of coverage right now. But just before we leave the idea of pipelines in North America, talking about the Keystone Capstone, well, there is another oil pipeline that just got approval in Canada, the Northern Gateway pipeline, that's going to be running oil pipelines from the tar sands there in Alberta to the coast of BC to ship out to Asia. So Canada looking to diversify their buyers for their oil. And if the U.S. isn't going to go ahead and approve the Keystone, then, hey, we're going to ship it out the other way. And I think that's part of the, you know, part of the game.
Well, how much of the oil that would come down the Keystone pipeline would end up in China or something anyway? So, I mean, you know, there's kind of that. I think that the pipeline you're talking about in Canada was one that Idle No More, the Indigenous people of Canada, was protesting against and doing actually a pretty good job of it, looking very radical here about a year ago and has somehow leveled off. You know how these things go. They're probably working for Dick Army now in the Tea Party, for all I know. So
sad, but probably true. All right, let's hit up another couple of things here. An interesting story. I have no idea about this, but you got it posted up. Air Force prepares to dismantle HAARP ahead of summer shutdown. So HAARP is going to fold? What's going on?
Well, actually, the interesting part of that story is they admitted that the project is completed. Now, what we have to understand is they have mobile HAARP that can go anywhere. They have, 80 different HAARP-related projects. Some are in Russia, some are in China. So obviously, the patent has gotten out, and we're not the only people that are doing it. And there's so much attention on, if you don't know what it is, it's the High Frequency Active Aurora Research Program. There's a great series done by Nick Begich, whose father was a congressman who was murdered with Hale Boggs, I believe. And Nick's brother Mark is a senator in Alaska currently, and he did a great series called Angels Don't Play That HAARP. So just so we can get forward to what it actually is, it cooks the ionosphere. That's a good thing. We just need to cook the ionosphere a little bit. Maybe we'll put some hot dogs and marshmallows up there. This is what they said. They're closing it down for the summer, and they're dismantling it. They say we're moving on to other ways of managing the ionosphere, which HAARP was really designed to do. It's multifaceted, of course. He said to inject energy into the ionosphere to be able to actually control it. But that work has been completed.
That's crazy. I mean, let's read that again. That is insane. And this is a letter to a senator that was actually penned by the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Science.
Yeah.
To inject energy into the ionosphere to be able to actually control it. But that work has been completed. So they are admitting in an open letter to the Senate that they control the ionosphere. But you're a crazy conspiracy theorist if you even bring up HAARP.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Man is like God, James. He can control the weather, the ionosphere. I mean, the earth, the chemicals and biological materials in the earth. They can control all life on earth. Okay. But, you know, burning the ionosphere is perfectly harmless. I'm sure there'll be no unintended consequences to that whatsoever. And the fact that they admitted that they're doing it and it's completed, I thought is good. You know, if you look at the actual patent, and Nick Begich talks about this, it can do everything from weather control, they think, to mind control, to free energy. It works generally on a Tesla patent, trigger hurricanes, tornadoes, some even say earthquakes, aid and abet, what they call scalar weapons. So the thing is kind of a super weapon. Why else would the Air Force be controlling it rather than, I don't know, the Health and Human Services or something? But it is an interesting story. And I guess you'll go up there in Gakona next year and it won't be there.
We'll see. But anyways, it's important, as always, to note that, of course, HAARP isn't the only ionospheric heating project in the U.S., let alone around the world. There's lots of them out there. So HAARP has gotten a lot of attention in particular, but there's many others that are doing the same thing. So just because they wrap this one up does not mean that it's over.
Mm.
All right. Let's go to another story that's sickening, but I think we've got to cover it. Do as we say, not as we do. TSA naked scanners illegal. But they're using them anyway. Oh, surprise, surprise. The government doing something illegally? Never.
Yeah, Rand Paul just came out the other day, was talking about how there's a double standard, that they know they're making laws they themselves don't have to follow, that be our quote-unquote lawmakers. This was actually the naked scanner. All the rest of the radiating and everything is perfectly okay. Sticking their hand down your pants, that's all perfectly fine, but they're just talking about the full body imaging scanners that are in 160 airports nationwide. And yeah, they're thumbing their nose at the rule of law. It is troubling that not only are they still using that, there are new ones that are out that are better than ever. And we have a video on that as well. So they're not only just creating laws at a whim and not following them. Again, remember, all folks, all laws are selectively enforced and political in nature and for old ladies crossing the street, so help an old lady cross the street. But they're violating the Federal Administration's Procedure Act. So there you go. I mean, it just kind of shows, doesn't this? We're talking about massive hypocrites here who just, you know, can't make enough laws. I think we get about 5,000-10,000 a year over here, knowing full well they don't have to follow any of them. Hey, how about anyone listening to this show that wants to take on a new project, start going down to the airports and making a stink about this, and maybe it will, you never know. No, I won't do anything. Sorry.
Yeah, well, the best that ever happens is you do get a lot of people interested in it, and then they just back down until it goes away, and then they continue what they're doing. Exactly like with the opt-out day and how they back down with the scanners on that day, and of course they just put them back into use in the next week.
Well, it's important to remember, if you're going out and you're pushing for the new law, remember that law doesn't apply to everybody.
Exactly.
So I'm all for repealing laws. Look, this is common sense. If Americans boycotted airports for a week, they'd change all the laws in our favor. That's how it'd be.
But. Well, that's it. And so just reading from this story, again, up on deadlinelive.info, the Administrative Procedures Act, which governs how federal agencies create regulations like airport body scanners, states that agencies must publish a notice of proposed rulemaking in the Federal Register and solicit public comments before promulgating a rule. TSA failed to do this and has been flouting the law for years. So it's not, I mean, again, that sounds like just some bureaucratic procedure rather than something vitally important to the law, but I think it's the principle here that matters, because I mean, look at it always boggles my mind that we know that the NSA was doing the illegal wiretapping program, if nothing else. I mean, we know about that came out in 2005 in the New York Times after they'd been sitting on that story for a year because they didn't want to influence George Bush's re-coronation. And when it came out, we were doing that, it's completely illegal, all right, we'll just go make a law to say retroactively it was okay, and everyone just goes along as if this is totally normal. These people are serial lawbreakers. They have absolutely no regard for the law. Why on earth do you think you're going to be able to chain them down with laws when they can just completely do whatever they want to do behind the scenes, and you might not ever find out about it, and if you do, they'll just make it retroactively legal. The idea of trying to restrain these people with just more laws just seems like the height of stupidity to me, and I don't really understand why people keep going for this and why they think now is going to be different and now we can reform from the NSA with some new, you know, type of legislation. It's just, it's like beating your head against a brick wall. And at some point,
you got to do something, right? David Simpson is a legislator in Texas, along with a lot of good people, put together, this is the stupidest law you ever had to make, right? It's not legal to grope our children in airports. Okay, it's child molestation. And guess what? The entire Texas legislature passed it. And it was going up to Rick Hairdo. I was a Bilderberger. I was a cheerleader to Bush League, Toll Road, and Perry. Sorry, that's how I always say it. And, you know, he said at his attack dog, David Dewhurst, to get with the DHS, and they literally, as if we were Libya, they literally threatened us, the entire state of Texas, mind you, with a no-fly zone. And everybody backed off the amendment, and it didn't go through. So, I mean, it just amazes me that you have to put laws out that your bureaucrats can't act like Caligula. You see what I'm saying? No offense to Caligula, you know?
Yeah, no, I understand. And again, it just boggles my mind. And that's, again, why I'm all on board with nullification and things like that, repealing laws and trying to get things taken out rather than putting more bureaucratic crap on
top. Anyway, I mean, I don't want to beat this dead horse, okay? But what has it ever stopped? Who have they ever caught? What has it ever stopped? That being TSA, the naked scant, and the groping. And okay,
I have no answer. Okay, well, let's move on to something happier, question mark? I don't know. Well, I'm not really happy when anyone dies, even if it's someone that's part of a globalist clique family. Final report on Richard Rockefeller plane crash. Rockefeller crash, NTSB cites weather pilot restrictions. Tell us about Richard Rockefeller and what happened to him.
Okay, well, he was visiting his 99-year-old dad on his birthday.
And his dad is?
Is David Rockefeller.
David Rockefeller, right.
He's he would be the patriarch of the Rockefeller family at this point. 99th birthday. He flies in to hang out with his dad and God knows what else, and flies back on Friday the 13th on a full moon. His plane crashes. Now, you're getting kind of the usual claptrap. One of the weird things is that in the report by the NTSB, which is the body that investigates things like 9/11 planes and they don't have a lot of credibility in my book. They also did TWA 800 and the John F. Kennedy crash. And this reminds me a lot of the John F. Kennedy crash, by the way. The tower, when asked, they never knew if he took off or not. How could you not know, especially if it's Richard Rockefeller? And how does Richard Rockefeller fly a plane that isn't safe? And how does he fly in poor visibility? And the thing kind of stinks. And it was like a ceremonial day, being Friday the 13th, a full moon and stuff. His dad's 99th birthday, turned that upside down. Talk about, you know, Freeman. We were talking about him before the show. There's all kinds of weird little calling cards in this. You know that Richard Rockefeller, and this kind of goes with another story we have at our website today, CDC 75 scientists exposed to anthrax. That's because they put high-level weaponized anthrax in these very unsecure laboratories, and it got out, and people started getting anthrax poisoning all over the place, right? And this had a direct connection to Doctors Without Borders. Now, we all think of Doctors Without Borders. They're good, man. They're going and they're volunteering their time, flying into war zones and helping people. That is, if you don't care that Richard Rockefeller was one of the founders of it. So, I mean, you know, what don't the Rockefellers control in the medical industry as well as anything else? That would be a question I'd have for anybody. Please prove to me they don't control absolutely everything. So I don't have a theory, but I think he might have had a little falling out with dad and the rest of the family, or either that or the devil, you know, needed a debt paid. And so we wish Richard Rockefeller all the luck in hell, and hopefully there'll be no lube on the pitchfork. But as far as the story goes, we've got all the details. It just reeks of political assassination almost. But then again, you'd think he's a Rockefeller. He should have privileges. I don't know. But the story, as usual, doesn't add up. So I got to ask questions.
Well, and I'm with you doing that. Again, I fully agree. There are some things in here that are worth investigating. Who knows if we'll ever find the truth of this? And who knows, again, who knows what goes on behind the scenes? Because I know that the story gets floated around that Nelson Rockefeller didn't die randomly, and that David may have had a role in that. But again, that's not something
benefits. Yeah.
Yeah. So who knows what kind of infighting goes on?
Maybe he saw something he shouldn't have seen. I mean, this could even happen. Do you put it past David Rockefeller to off his own kid if he's going to be a problem? I don't.
Yeah, it wouldn't really surprise me. And again, it's all in the family because John D. Sr. used to tease his grandchildren by trying to cheat them as much as possible. He tried to cheat them every single time he'd do gambling with them and try to cheat, you know, and try to get a dime out of them or whatever, to teach them, you know, how to handle money or whatever. And again, that's part of the Rockefeller lore that they actually like to trumpet to the world. So yeah, it's a pretty sick family all around. Anyway, no,
James, they're just all good philanthropists.
That is, yeah. Isn't
they put all their money to the Rockefeller Foundation? It's not because they don't want to pay taxes or tell people how much money they have. It's just because they want to give all their money to help the poor people. It's just like dropping dimes on the sidewalk and watching the urchins pick them up. It's because they love us.
Nothing is more disgusting than knowing the history of this family and the way they invented the PR industry specifically to get people to stop calling them the devil. And it worked so completely well. You really can buy pretty much anything, including the adoration of the public. So Bill Gates learned that lesson very well and is doing quite well now because of that. Let's turn to, finally, just a story that I just saw, and I've downloaded this video, and I'm looking forward to watching it. As a child of the 90s, of course, I was a Nirvana fan, and Chris Novoselic on Punk, Fair Vote, Why He Dumped the Dems and Why the GOP should, the GOP should embrace anarchy. And this is a great story for me. I'm so excited for this because I'm kind of kicking myself now. I remember a few years ago I was debating, should I even try getting Chris on the program? You know, maybe it would be fun to talk to him, but I thought, oh, he's just going to spew Democrat propaganda. But now he's being interviewed by Reason.tv. He's supported Ron Paul in the past. He's talking about anarchy. I mean, maybe he's turned the corner. Maybe he's out of the left-right paradigm.
Well, not exactly, but he's definitely on the way. I highly encourage you to watch this video. I'm not a huge fan of Nick Gillespie and Reason TV for some obvious reasons, but they had the juice to get him. He doesn't do any interviews. I have connections. I can't get him. You're famous. Maybe you'll get him. There's a lot of questions I would have for him that I would love to ask, but what's really interesting is it's not just Chris Novoselic, who is, again, the bassist for Nirvana, and many other bands, by the way, and was just inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, all-around good guy. But it's a complete paradigm shift. He still has paradigms, which is, you know, something I'm trying to work out. But it's like, I think it's systemic of a lot of other young people. He's my age, right? So he's older, but, you know, I'm seeing a lot of young people. I meet a lot of young people, and the Democratic Party doesn't have, or called the Democrat Party, they don't have a stranglehold on all young people and all artists anymore. They are losing control. In fact, when I played little pieces of this video on my show today, my show crashed. Skype cut out on us. It was like somebody out there didn't want kids to hear this interview. And he goes on to talk about how he lives on a farm. He grows his own food. He has guns to protect the goats and the chickens. And talks about the drug war and a little bit about his music and the band and what drove Kurt Cobain. And his book is actually Grunge in Government, Let's Fix This Broken Democracy. That was in 2004. Here it is 10 years later. He'd probably want to burn that book at this point. So it's about an hour interview. Talks about voting but the main thing here is that here's a guy that was completely in servitude. And you know what he said is it sounded just like somebody supporting Rand Paul, James. Well, we thought we could I could go in and I could change the Democrat Party. Right. I mean, that's a little hubris involved in that because it hasn't changed in hundreds of years or whatever. And I hear the same thing from the Paul people. We're going to change. You know, government, we're infiltrating the Republican Party and we're going to change them. And we've seen kind of how that's worked. But one thing is that those two campaigns of Ron Paul running for president, getting him on the debate stage, getting his mass multimillion-dollar media machine going, got the kind of free market libertarian ideals out and even anarchy ideals out to a lot of people and a lot of young people. And I think we're seeing some of the fruits of that. Why did he think the Republicans should be for anarchy? If they really believe in everything they stand for, then that's exactly what it should be. People doing it for themselves and not having government doing for it. People volunteering and not being forced to do things. So if he is if he's a symptom of a growing anti-movement in this country, I like it. And I'm giving him a pass on some of the other stuff. So,
well, there you go. I mean, again, I don't think it serves anyone's interest to attack people who are starting to break the paradigm just because they're still stuck in sort of the old paradigm.
So, I was just thinking that today, too. Yeah, I mean, you don't go up to these, please, anybody out there. I know you're very smart. You've been listening to James Corbett for years. You're obviously, you've learned a lot. You're very intelligent. You're probably the smartest guy in any room you go into. That doesn't win hearts and minds to go show people how smart you are. You need to have, you know, a little empathy. You need to remember what it was like when you first woke up and you first started seeing things outside of the matrix, and have a little compassion, and don't dump all your information on them in 2 seconds and scare them away, please. Because I had that exact reaction to this interview today. People were very upset. Why should musicians be talking? He's just a one percenter and a millionaire. What does he know? It's you know, yeah, let's scare the guy off because he's finally waking up and he's no X-ene at this point, but I see in the future he might be.
You know, that's the first time I've heard you do that voice in particular. I like that one. You should keep it up your sleeve for later on.
But all right. Our boys want a new car. Thank you.
All right. Well, Jack, I think we've managed to find a little bit of a note of positivity to leave things on for once. So that's good. I like that. So let's leave it there then. Once again, tell people the website, how they can find it, what they'll find there.
Okay, deadlinelive.info, radiofreeblood.com, and if you donate to the show, you get nothing except some karma, and you keep me on the air live 5 days a week. James, I would love to be doing podcasts like you do for subscriptions, but I'm addicted. I love doing live radio. I love covering things live and dancing on the edge of a pin, as many of my friends tell me I do. But if we don't get donations, if people don't support the show, there's just no way we can continue to do it the way we've been. So please support Blood Care, not Obamacare, and donate to our show if you don't mind. JackBlood@Hotmail.com for more instructions, or just simply PayPal us over there. Thank you, James. I appreciate you, man.
Well, Jack, you have the radio voice. You have the silky smooth delivery. You are excellent in live condition. I'm excellent when I'm carefully edited. So my hat's off to you for the work that you do. And I hope
always great on my show, man. I'd love having you. And, you know, the invite is open. You're so busy. You know, but you are, I'd say you're a national treasure. I just don't know what nation.
Yeah, neither do I, actually. So international treasure. I like that.
Stay
all right,
bold, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Okay, great. And remember, please do donate to Jack Blood Show to keep it going. So thank you, Jack. Talk to you later.